Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin broadcasting from Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. And we have on our show today a guest, Dr. Robert Marks, who is a professor at Baylor University, started a new evolutionary informatics lab that is doing some very interesting research on the informational generative capabilities of Darwinian evolution. And we have him on our show today to talk with us about his research and the lab. Thank you very much for being on our show with us, Dr. Marks.
Thank you, Casey.
Well, first, why don't you describe for our listeners a little bit about what your position is at Baylor University and what you teach?
My actual title here is Distinguished Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering. And what do I teach? I teach signal processing and image intelligence. I have a new book, which is coming out next year, Fourier Analysis, the Handbook of Fourier Analysis by Oxford Press. Most of my active research, however, right now, and a course that I teach here, is in the area of computational intelligence. Computational intelligence includes things such as fuzzy systems, neural networks. Let me plug my other book, Neural Smithing, with my co-author, Russ Reed. Evolutionary computing, and this is the area that brings me into this debate about Darwinian evolution. Evolutionary computing has to do with emulating evolution on a computer, and it's an entire field in engineering where the emulation of the evolution actually results in engineering design.
Do you have a Fourier Analysis for Dummies book is actually a question
no,
I have, because I remember studying Fourier Analysis in grad school, and it was not exactly my favorite, but this sounds very fascinating.
Clearly you didn't have a depth of understanding that was required.
Obviously not. Well, I'm an ID proponent, so doesn't that somehow makes me less intelligent than others? Well, actually, I think for our listeners, though, could you just go into more detail explaining what do you mean when you say evolutionary informatics? What exactly does that mean?
Well, one of the things that we do in engineering, again, is do simulated evolution on the computer. And indeed, it does work, but it's nowhere near the sort of gradual, incremental process that I understand is associated with Darwinian evolution. It's more like more in the area of dog breeding, if you will, in terms of its computational complexity. But it's turned out to be relatively successful. NASA, for example, was able to generate an antenna that they patented using the evolutionary computation technique. The area that I'm interested in and have worked with Bill Dembski on in developing some of his ideas is, as you said, evolutionary informatics. It does turn out that in all of the programs that you see in evolutionary computing, that even though there is some processes which are going on in the computer, there's an enormous amount of information which is snuck into the side. Many times, proponents of evolutionary computing don't recognize, refuse to recognize this contribution to the process. And in the universe, everybody knows about matter and space and energy. There is a fourth component, which is information. And it's a component which really hasn't been defined or studied. And it looks like its application to evolutionary computing and evolutionary theory is going to be very, very fruitful. We have actually developed theory where we can measure the amount of information which is required to be fed into an evolutionary program in bits. Many times it's very implicit, but nevertheless, it's there.
So what got you interested in studying evolutionary informatics?
Well, I initially got involved in the area of neural networks, and when I came to Baylor, of course, Bill Dembski had been at Baylor at the Polanyi Center, and I was familiar with some of Bill's works, especially his great book, No Free Lunch. And we had a chance meeting, and since I knew him already, even before I met him, we were able to strike up a conversation and find that we really resonated on some of the ideas that he was proposing and began to work on this and actually have developed a number of papers, some of which are actually posted on our website, evolutionaryinformatics.org.
Evolutionaryinformatics.org. Okay.
Yes.
I guess this brings to what is the name of your lab, and can you describe in a little bit more detail what exactly the research is that you're doing?
Well, let's take it the elementary way. We've looked at a number of elementary sort of evolutionary programs. I think a classical one, for example, is out of Dawkins' book, where he talks about, and he thinks it is like a weasel and is able to, quote-unquote, evolve that in, I think, 43 steps or something like that. Well, it turns out that the process that he used actually infused a lot of information, a lot of beforehand knowledge of what he was searching for. And we're actually able to look at that and measure this in, again, measure it in bits. And the reason we can do that, because as the title of Bill's book, No Free Lunch, suggests, that there is no free lunch. That in 1996, there was a paper written by Wolpert and McCready, which is just kind of blew away everybody in our field, because it said that no search algorithm was universally better than any other search algorithm. Because of that, we can actually draw a baseline right now and measure everything from that baseline in terms of information that is folded into the evolutionary algorithm.
So don't you know that associating with ID proponents can be harmful to your career? I mean, what are you doing working with Bill Dembski? This is not smart.
No. Actually, yeah, I'm very aware of, I think I'm aware of the consequences of doing that. I'm familiar with Guillermo Gonzalez and his recent debacle at Iowa State University. I actually knew Guillermo when he was a postdoc at the University of Washington, where I spent 26 years. And I knew him, I followed his career, and my jaw dropped when I looked at his record at Iowa State, and he wasn't given tenure. It was terrible. We had Frank Beckwith here last year at Baylor, who was demonized for his association with Discovery Institute and Sternberg at NIH. And yes, you're exactly right. The association with ID in any way is very detrimental to one's career. However, I'm in the autumn of my career. I have a pretty well-established research record in terms of publications and different things, and I have tenure. And I think that everybody that starts out working in ID should first have tenure before they do any work in the area.
Before they come out of the closet.
Before they come out of the closet, absolutely.
And even Bill Dembski has had his own difficulties getting a research program implemented at Baylor, and I think that has had to do with some of the opposition in the academy to do with this. And I don't expect you necessarily talk about that if you don't want to. But
I know a little bit about Bill's situation here. I think it was unfortunate. Baylor has a lot of good things that they're trying to do.
Sure.
I think that one of the reasons that I was attracted here after 26 years in a university is what Baylor is trying to do with their identity and the goals that they're attempting to implement. So Bill's history here is a very unfortunate one, and I wish it didn't happen, but it did.
Sure. Well, but I think the fact that you're doing the research you're doing at Baylor, and the fact that at the end of the day, Frank Beckwith's tenure decision was actually reversed and he was granted tenure, I mean, those are good signs.
Yes.
As far as there is a contingency at Baylor that is open to academic freedom for supporters or sympathizers with intelligent design.
Well, I think that the administrators simply looked at Beckwith's records and they go, this guy deserves tenure. There's no doubt about it. And I was hoping the same thing would happen with Gonzalez's case, but apparently it didn't take traction there as it should have. Mm.
Well, let's move back to your research. Can you summarize for our listeners what important scientific questions do you feel will be addressed by the research that you are doing in your evolutionary informatics lab?
One of them is this idea in evolution. By the way, I should point out in the beginning that my comments are as an expert in computational intelligence. I'm not a biologist, and for me to talk about the details of biology is as stupid as a British biologist talking about expertise in religion. So I won't dwell there.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, you do?
Ahead.
Okay.
No, I don't. I have no idea what you're talking about, but you can keep going.
Okay, thank you. So this is from the perspective of an engineer who actually designs things, and that's one of the reasons that I think that engineers are really interested in the area of intelligent design and associated areas very, very much.
Sure.
One of the things that I have found in reading some of the biological literature is everything there is teleological. Teleological means that there is a goal in mind for the evolution process. Anytime we go to the computer and actually simulate the evolution, we have some sort of goal in mind. Yet if you go over into the biology area, they say Darwinian evolution is not teleological. It has no goal. It's just the process of meaningless random events, and boom, all of a sudden you have something which appears designed. Yet, interestingly, in my limited exposure to some of the literature in biology, everything they do in computer modeling of evolution is teleological.
Sure.
And so one of the things that I would like to see, and I have a challenge, is to actually show me an emulation of a computer model that is non-teleological. And I don't believe that there is one. We have looked at some different programs in the area of biology, and one of the things that is often claimed is that there is a magical design which occurs with the computer doing the evolution. Again, not paying attention to all of this information that is snuck into the side. And what we have done, we've been able to look at, for example, a paper from Tom Schneider at NIH, which actually proposed a evolutionary program, EV, and we're actually able to show that the amount of added information that he was using was incredible. There were two stages to it, one where he actually put together the program and then used an evolutionary program to do a search of this model. And it turns out his model was so information rich that he didn't even require an evolutionary program. He could have done it just by blind queries, and it works better. And we actually were able to show this and have it on one of our papers at evolutionaryinformatics.org. And we actually showed that the amount of added information that he placed into his algorithm was such that there only was required 8 bits of information that he needed to search for. The other one, that we've looked at, which we haven't published as of yet, is the AVITA program. Now, the AVITA program has been written by some very top people in the area of computational intelligence and biology. They purported to show through this process that, gosh, evolution can indeed happen on a computer. And it was Pennock, who was one of the witnesses that testified at the Dover trial. There was reference made to this program, which is called AVITA. And AVITA, like many of these other programs that we see in the evolutionary literature, said, wow, look at the magic of evolution. Look at all this information that we gained without having information. I am actually starting to believe that there's a law, a type of law of conservation of information. That is, you can't get much more information out of an evolutionary program than you put in. Well, we have also done an analysis of AVITA, and we'll very soon be publishing a paper showing that the amount of information that was snuck in from the side was such that the program would not have a snowball's chance if it didn't have this extra information placed into the side. They also talk about it being non-targeted. It does have a target, and they even say it looks like it has a target, but it doesn't have a target. Well, it does have a target, and we'll be showing that and actually giving measures of the amount of information in bits that was added to the AVITA program.
Well, this sounds like very interesting research, and it sounds like the fundamental question you're asking is basically, can evolutionary algorithms through computation actually produce new information, or do they require the input of intelligence? Was that a basically a correct description?
That's a very good summary, yes.
Okay. Well, Dr. Robert Marks at Baylor University, thank you very much for being on our show today. This has been a real pleasure to learn about your research, and we wish you the best as you do the research and hopefully try to get it published. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Casey.
This is Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.